never rests.
Beauty killers in the sky. What a thrilling time to be alive.
Good Thursday morning to everybody out there. I'm Jake Rowe. That's Palmer Times. We're from Dogs HQ, and this is the Georgia Show. The last one, really, of this week. Depends on how you look at your week. If you think Sunday is still part of this week, well, we'll be back one more time Sunday night. But this is mine and Palmer's chance to talk to you guys, come to you every Thursday morning here, a little bit later this morning because we had some other stuff kind of pop up that we had to handle. But this is kind of our chance to talk about the bye week and what Georgia's been up to, what we think Georgia's been up to. And then we're going to get into a little bit to the cocktail party there with you know, Billy Napier's Gators kind of playing better football now. And I take some questions there at the end of the show. So if you've got some questions, don't hesitate to go ahead and get them in the queue and get us started with those so that we can get to them at the end of the show. We'll get to them specifically. But Palmer, this bye week, it's work week. George is definitely not going to talk about rest and recovery a whole lot, although it's big for that. What you think they've been up to?
Probably not resting on their laurels of that win over Texas. You know, I do think that they probably, you know, with that being a longer trip and you know, a late game and an early return on Sunday, I would guess that Monday's practice was probably a little bit lighter, and that makes sense, especially with it being the bye week. You know, I think it's probably important that they work and develop some of these younger players. We've seen that already, you know, come through clutch with the way Chris Cole has been able to play and step in. And, you know, KJ Bolden's going to have more on his plate this coming game, being a starter, you know, with Dan Jackson out. And so, you know, I think that they are quickly turning the page. Kirby told us Tuesday that they are, you know, starting to look ahead and get a feel for some of these opponents. And we heard him say, you know, hey, this is a dangerous finish to the season with the way that the teams they're playing are talented, but also playing their best football right now.
Yeah, and you know, Florida obviously has kind of turned a corner there. And then, you know, Ole Miss, you know, up and down, a couple losses, you know, and one of those kind of a shocker. You got Tennessee, you got UMass, got Georgia Tech, got a stretch of home games coming, but that's, we're still, you know, over 2 weeks away from that. Because the Bulldogs, you know, kind of have the neutral site game in Jacksonville, and then they've got to go to Ole Miss. But, yeah, I mean, they can say all they want about this not being about rest and recovery, but I don't know how it's about anything else, especially for Georgia's, you know, starters, and especially the offensive line. I mean, the more you hear coming out, I mean, it's like almost like every guy is kind of dealing with something. We knew Jared Wilson was dealing with something. We know now that Dylan Fairchild is dealing with something. There was some stuff late last week about Ernest Green that, you know, we've heard more on this week that Georgia's banged up up front. And I think that is where, like, you know, Georgia can get the most out of this. Because if you've been playing with some guys at 75, 80%, you're hoping you can get them 90, 95%, you know, coming out of this bye week. And that includes, you know, and there's two birds with one stone that comes with that. And, you know, that's, you know, maybe limiting some practice reps and getting some guys some rest and some recovery while also getting some of those reps for the younger, you know, guys, forgetting, you know, Daniel Calhoun and Bo Hughley and those younger offensive linemen, even Monroe Freeling, who has been a staple for Georgia this year in terms of playing, but hasn't really, you know, been the guy at 30, 40 snaps. And so, you know, I think that, you know, the big fellas is where Georgia can obviously kind of heal up at this point in the season. And they've got some more injuries, but I don't know that any of those you're necessarily expecting back. Maybe Branson Robinson has a chance. I don't know, Palmer, if Kirby talked about him on Tuesday night whenever he met with you guys.
Yeah, he did not talk about Branson. You know, did mention that they're hopeful to get Smile back and you know, soon, and a little bit skeptical of that. But I think that Tate Ratledge is somebody, you know, as we talk about the offensive line, somebody that has a chance to return against Florida. Jordan Hall is another one that has a chance to return
against Florida. Yeah, I would be a little bit surprised if Jordan Hall doesn't come back against Florida. I mean, for all intents and purposes, it looked like he was fully available for Texas. And I think game flow kind of made it to where they only needed three. You know, they were getting Texas off the field with turnovers and with punts. there in the first half. So those guys weren't having to play long stretches. And in the second half, they weren't having to play two at the time. Very often they were, you know, in pass rush packages a ton.
Yeah. And I mean, we watched both those guys warm up and they were, you know, Jordan Hall more involved this week than he has been in the past. And Tate, you know, while in an emergency role, he looked like he was a little bit healthier than an emergency.
Oh, man, he was moving well. He was moving well.
So, you know, I think that the bye week comes at the right time. Jake, I know you wrote about that, but I think the bye week comes at the right time for Georgia to get healthy and you know, get everybody back, maybe not even to 100%, but feeling better. You know, Kirby told us yesterday on the teleconference saying that Mikael Williams wasn't 100%. And I think that makes what he did, you know, with two sacks, almost three, if not for a face mask, you know, even more impressive. So, you know, I think that overall, this is just an opportunity to catch your breath, regroup, reset, recover, and get ready for this closing stretch.
Yeah, for sure. And you're never going to hear a coach say the bye week comes at a bad time. That's for sure. That's just never going to come out of anybody. I mean, you're going to hear it come out of somebody's mouth that it's the perfect time a lot more than you're going to hear it say it's the bad time. And, you know, this is Georgia's second one. This coincides, honestly, Palmer, with a little bit of a demarcation in Carson Beck. It's something I noted earlier this week when I wrote about it is, you know, last year coming into the bye week, Carson Beck was throwing the ball almost 36 times a game, and Georgia's offense had shown some flashes. It had put together a complete game at this point last year. It had played that Kentucky game, and it had kind of really gone off. But he had went into the bye week with a stretch of three games where he turned the ball over four times. That's a far cry from nine times in four games like he's got going right now. Then you come out of the bye week, and the pass attempts tick down. And listen, this is without – you know, this is with Ladd back in the lineup for a couple of games in full. You know, he gets hurt in that Mississippi State game. But, you know, he loses Ra-Ra Thomas and Ladd McConkey and Brock Bowers at different points. And, you know, kind of, a, you know, in and out guys there and weapons. But Carson turned into, I believe it was, I want to say he had like 11 touchdowns, 12 touchdowns, one or two interceptions down the stretch, you know, of that season, final five games of the year. You know, didn't fumble, didn't put the ball, turned it over very few times. And I think that, you know, kind of the pass attempts went down and, you know, I think maybe taking some of this offense off of Beck's shoulders, some of that may come into play with the offensive line. You know, you're getting a little bit more healthy. Maybe you feel better about your chances to put your hand on the ground and knock somebody off the ball. I don't know. There's just so much, you know, you kind of have to speculate about when you're doing this. But I feel like, you know, coming off this bye week, you're not necessarily just looking at injuries and just looking at who's more healthy, but where can you self-scout and make a few adjustments? Kirby talked about this, some self-scouting, some quality control stuff. Where can you fix yourself and maybe like, hey, we're not doing this enough, or yeah, we're doing this too much. And I think that is a key area for this team is that quarterback play and how much they're putting on Beck. Sorry.
And one thing I think that's interesting about all this is that this is Georgia's second bye week. Normally they don't have two. And so I think that you've got an opportunity to go back and look at what you were doing before that first bye week, some of the adjustments you made then. How did that work? Did that work? You know, is that something that you want to, you know, and Jake, we talked about it, like, you know, before the first bye week, it was, well, Carson's too timid, and now it's Carson's too aggressive. And you got to find a happy medium between the adjustments, what you were doing before that first bye week and what you were doing coming into this second one. I think that that's where this is an interesting opportunity, you know, to maybe go back to some of the things that you were doing and continue on with some of the things that you, you know, had made adjustments on.
Let me ask you this question, because I think this was interesting. It's something that popped up in my head. In terms of complete game and how this offense is played and can it play a complete game and all that stuff, how much differently do you think we would be discussing it through that lens if Georgia had led Clemson 17-0 at the half and then went on to score 17 points in the second half and beat them 34-3 with a good balanced, you know, four quarters of scoring time?
Even 13-0 at the half. I mean, right. If they just put it – put the ball in the end zone one of those times. You know, I think that you're – it's interesting. I think that you are probably talking about this offense in a little bit different of a way. You know,
I think there's more confidence amongst the fans that this team could play a complete game.
But it's in there.
Because they would have definitely seen it before. You know, that would at least be there.
Yeah. No, I definitely agree on that. And
because that's one of the differences I point to from the 2022 season, because I don't think we adequately remember, and I'm going to get to the reason, I don't think we adequately remember the struggle that Georgia had against Samford, or the turnovers and the issues it had against Missouri and against Kent State. You know, they scored a late touchdown against Kent State, or that was a ball. That was, I mean, I want to say that was 32-22 until Georgia scored a late touchdown. I mean, they scored 33 against Samford, 39 against Kent State, 26 against Missouri. But folks don't remember that as much, and I totally understand it. I'm not trying to call anybody out here, because they had put complete games together against Oregon and against South Carolina, and they had popped in those games, and so you knew you had the feeling that they were kind of playing with their food. That's where this one's different. You don't get that feeling, and I don't think that's the truth. I think this offense is scuffling because it can't execute. It's not executing at the level it needs to. I think it's a play or two here and there, and you're probably looking at this different. But you got to catch the football. You got to protect the quarterback and give him time to let routes develop and give him time to step into throws. And that's something that, you know, and when you're Carson Beck, man, you got to know situations, and you can't go trying to fit the ball between two defenders. I'll say this. It cracked me up. I was watching the All Access show on the SEC network, and they showed Carson Beck's interception to Ben Jurasik on the second drive of the game where Andrew Mukuba picks him off. And I'll say this for that pass. It was ill-advised. It shouldn't have gone a second and four, you know, live to fight another day. It was on the money. It was headed right in. Ben Jurasik, I mean, it was going to put the split the triangle in his hands. It was exactly where it had to be. So if you're looking for a tiny silver lining in that one, you know, you wish Beck could have put one on the money to Lawson Lucky a few plays on the next drive, and Georgia probably scores early in that game, and you're thinking differently about that one too. But to me, it's a handful of plays at most each game they've got to get figured out, and that's what this kind of get back to the basics and let's study ourselves time is for.
Yeah, I mean, going back to that 22 season, they had also put up 42 against Auburn and 55 against Vanderbilt. So I think it was –
Yeah, I was just more talking about with the shoddy games. They kind of started to slide out of it, I think, against Auburn and against Vanderbilt. Although I believe Auburn was a slow start too. I don't think
it was. Yeah, it was a slow start there. No, but I think that you're right. There's probably a very different feeling about this Georgia team if they just make a play here, a play there. You know, And we talked about it Saturday night in the press box. You know, yes, it was 23-0 at the break, and that game was still a ball game, but it was a lot closer to being 30-0, 33-0, you know, that type of score than it was a 14-0 type game. Georgia gave away some chances. They got some chances, and they forced some of those chances. But they did not necessarily, you know, do themselves any favors early in that game. And so I think that that's where you just want to see everything get cleaned up just a tad bit. You know, and I think if you can do a little bit here, a little bit there, it can make a big difference overall.
No doubt. There's one question I want to get to right now because I want to discuss it for a second. What's Kirby's record versus number one ranked opponents? I've got 3 wins. Because I've got Michigan, Tennessee, and Alabama in the national championship. Not Michigan. I'm sorry. Texas. I was talking about the one we just saw. Texas was number one. I've got Texas, Alabama, the national championship game, Tennessee at home in 2022. So beat the number one team in the country each of the last 3 years. I don't know that they faced the number one team other than that. Team
last year.
Sorry. Yeah, you're right. Who did so? It was
it's
three so of the last 4 years.
It's 3-1 is his record against the number one team.
Which number one team did he lose to?
Alabama in the 18 championship
game. 18 SEC championship, right? Yeah. Okay.
LSU was the number two team going into that 19 SEC championship. Alabama was number two in 2020. And then, you know, you turn your attention to 21. They got Alabama in that national championship game.
I let last year and this year bleed together for me. Three out of the last 4 years, they faced the number one team in the country and they've beaten the number one team in the country. They've done it at home. They've done it away. They've done it at neutral site. And the one that they've lost was at a neutral site where they can't beat Alabama. Absolutely can't beat Alabama. Can't hold a fourth quarter lead almost against Alabama in Mercedes-Benz Stadium. I think they've had a couple, but they've gone away. Those leads have. But yeah, that was an interesting one for me. I thought that was a 3-1 against number one teams. That's pretty solid, man.
And if I'm not mistaken, Georgia all time has just 8 or 9 wins. Wins, I think, now against the number one team. So a third of Georgia's wins against the number one team have come in the last 4 years.
I know in what was it, 85? Was it 85 when Georgia upset Florida when it was the number one team in the country? You know, something like that. That one was Georgia came up with a big one there.
Give me one second, I can pull up.
Have some of that for you at Dogs HQ next week. Some of the greatest all time, you know, kind of Gator killer performances and some of Georgia's all time wins over Florida. That's something we try to do every week, but. You know, yeah, there's a lot of I tell you what, Palmer, you mentioned Chris Cole earlier. I think you there's some meat out there for folks. They're talking about it a lot in the comments.
Here we go. Against the number one ranked team, they've now played them 9 times. They have 4 wins. 3 of those are under Kirby Smart.
Wow, that's incredible.
They are 4-5 in school history versus the top ranked team and are 3-1 under Kirby Smart.
Unbelievable. That's something to hang your hat on right there. I mean, that's pretty strong. And I'm pretty sure that other win came in the 80s against Florida.
It did.
And it was an upset. So, I mean, when Georgia got that win, it had been 36 years since Georgia had beaten the number one team in the country when they beat Alabama in that national championship game. And then they've gone on since then to get 2 more wins over number one ranked teams. Which is pretty cool. Both of them wearing orange, by the way, those last two. So I know how Georgia fans feel about orange. All right, I know how I feel about Prize Picks, Palmer. Prize Picks is our jam, and we love them. So Prize Picks, Palmer, we've got to get creative this week because Georgia doesn't have any games, and so there's nobody there on the board. But listen, this is daily fantasy. This is skills-based. And Palmer and I are running low on skills of late. So we've struggled. Our skills are in the tank here of late. And so we got to figure out a way to get back on the right track to do some better analysis. We're going to slip to the NFL here and we're going to look at dogs in the NFL. We got Nick Chubb, we got Brock Bowers, and we have got Matthew Stafford and
playing tonight. If you're watching this live.
Yeah. If you're watching this live, little
Thursday night football. To get our Prize Picks play started with the Rams taking on the Vikings. 34 passing attempts for Matthew Stafford. We're going to go less than that. He's done it just twice this season. He's got a banged-up group of receivers. We are going less than that. Brock Bowers against Kansas City on Sunday. Man, that could be a shootout. They're going to need the points there. And I think that Brock Bowers does find the end zone. And then Nick Chubb on Sunday against the Baltimore Ravens. Divisional matchup, you know, as he's returned, you know, we know the importance of those. And so I add in the fact that they've got a backup quarterback in there. Not that their starter was all that great, but a backup quarterback in there, 46.5 rushing yards. We are going to go more than that. So, but Jake, here's what we're going to do. Instead of doing the power play, we're going to do a flex play. We haven't been all too hot, so we're gonna do a flex play. So if we hit 2 out of 3, we do still win. So our flex play here, as opposed to the power play, and we are gonna roll with that. Prize Picks, use promo code DOGS for $50 on your first play of 5. Super fun way to play. Super fun way to stay engaged in all these games. And, you know, hey, look at the college football stuff. You know, Georgia's not in action, but there's plenty of fun games this week, and you can have a vested interest in them by getting involved on Prize Picks. Use promo code DAWGS, D-A-W-G-S, for $50 on to win $50 on your first play of five, win or lose there.
This is not a talking point for Prize Picks, Palmer, but the thing I love about it is you can choose how much you bet. You can choose how risky you want to be. And you can do your own research, and you can kind of figure it out and give yourself the backing to the point that you're like, all right, it didn't work out this week, but those were good picks. And Prize Picks gives you so many different options. It's so easy. Every time I go to the website, I am blown away at the different options they have, and how smooth it is and how easy it works, because it is one of the best things running out there. We appreciate Prize Picks. We've been doing it for a couple of years now, and it's a lot of fun.
Well, and Jake, to your point about, you know, feeling like, hey, we were just there. You know, I looked at you in the press box after Trevor Etienne ripped off an 18-yard run, and I said, there goes our run.
We had him on. What was the run?
So he had an 18-yard run, and the line right there was 17 and a half. But
oh, my God.
We were on with Quinn Ewers. Of course, Anthony Edwards did score on that promo play. So we were good there. You know, we've had weeks where we've been just one away. And so, we have not done a flex play yet. We've done all power plays. But I think this is the week that we're going to turn to our flex play here, flex our muscles a little bit and, you know, bite the bullet, say, hey, if we hit them all, great. If we miss one, we're still going to win.
All right. Concerning this game right here, the world's largest outdoor cocktail party. I'm never going to call it anything else.
Nor should we.
I can't wait because I want to be aggressive. I want one of those like put down 25 to win 400 type deals. That's what we're going to get to when we get to that Florida game. We're going to be aggressive for that one. We're going to go for broke and turn things around. That's after we win this flex play this week. All right, so Palmer, this cocktail party. How much have you followed Florida, and how much have you kind of looked at where they've gotten better?
From afar, they've been a team that's been on the radar. Admittedly, the last few weeks, I have not caught their action all that much. You know, I feel like for me and for a lot of people, the way that they played against Miami and the way that they played against Texas A&M very much weighs in all of our minds. And those were not good games, and those were not good games at home. So I think that the way that they played those games is sticking with people. But like you said, they've improved. They've won three of their last four. That one game in there that I was able to catch a little bit of was that Tennessee game. Where they took a top 10 team in Tennessee on the road to overtime. And, you know, if I was Billy Napier, you know, especially with the saying scared money don't make money, probably would have gone for two there at the end of the game and not taken that to overtime. You know, but and then at that point, we might be talking about winners of four straight. And, you know, Billy Napier coaching and saving his job with the way that they're playing. I think DJ Lagway is somebody that has brought a spark to that offense. He's kind of done that all year long, but now it's his team. It is now his team with Graham Mertz out for the season. And so going to be interested to see. I mean, you know, how sustainable is it that he continues to just make plays with his legs and isn't able to throw the ball around because he didn't really throw the ball against Kentucky. You know, if you're a one-dimensional team against Georgia, Georgia will make you pay. But, you know, I think that Lagway certainly brings a lot to the table, and there's talent on that team on both sides of the ball. Guys that Georgia recruited and wanted and didn't necessarily win the battles on, and guys that if Billy Napier were to leave Florida or were to get fired from Florida, and those guys hit the transfer portal, there's a lot of guys that Georgia would be taking a look at.
Yeah, I agree. I agree 100%. And that's, you know, Florida's got some talent. One thing I will say, though, when I look at this game, and I have gotten to watch Florida a couple times here lately, kudos to Billy Napier for just getting this thing back to wobbly where it was, you know, that Miami game, listen, I thought it was done, man. I thought it was over. Then they go in, they give Tennessee all the fight they can handle in Neyland Stadium. And I'll tell you this too. I have grown to absolutely love the Tennessee-Florida rivalry. Like, it is one of my favorite non-Georgia games to watch every single year. I was talking to you guys about it in the press box. Like, there was Ole Miss and LSU going on. There was another game going on that's coming down to the final minute. And you've got Florida and
Oregon is what that other game was.
Yeah. And you've got Florida and Tennessee over here in a rock fight. Just, I mean, it's ugly football. It's not even pretty, and I can't take my eyes off of it. I'm sitting here watching two mules fight over a turnip. And I love it. Like, it's, I mean, I don't know. I don't, maybe that's just maybe I'm low class like that. I don't know. But I love that rivalry. I think it's awesome. I give Billy Napier a lot of credit. With that said, Palmer, when I look at this game and I look at the DJ Lagway I saw in that Tennessee game, who made some plays, don't get me wrong, he did make some plays. But I think if most of that Georgia defensive effort that showed up against Texas shows up against DJ Lagway, I'd be a little bit more concerned with Graham Mertz, even though Graham Mertz is maybe a little less mobile, but more of a veteran quarterback that could kind of make you pay. I like Georgia's chances a lot in that game, and I really can't wait to see the line because I don't think it's going to be an astronomically high line. Like, I don't think it's going to be 17.5 or 20 or anything like that. I think we're probably looking at a you know, 13.5 to 15.5 type deal here.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't. I would probably with that number, I'd probably take Georgia. You know, I'm going to Vegas Insider to see if they've got anything already. I don't.
I think it's probably all of the old lines, all the
A couple 17.5s.
Okay.
And that might be an updated number.
Because what was the initial number?
It doesn't have an open number listed at, but there are a couple of 20.5s on here and even a 21.5.
Yeah, you really just never know, because I remember kind of late during the bye week before Alabama, somebody came out and they were like, so there was a tweet that was like, you know, Georgia opens as an underdog for the first time and whatever. And they had Alabama 3.5 like that Thursday. But then Sunday, when the line came out and everybody got together and there was a consensus, Georgia was the 2.5 or 3 point favorite at that point. So that one was kind of weird.
This 17.5 it shows as from posted last night. So,
okay.
That's kind of where we're getting started with this week.
A little more than I thought. Yeah.
17.5, because that was 22 in May, 21 in June. So, you know, Georgia probably going to be 17.5. And look, it may get bet down to kind of where you thought, especially with the way that Florida's been playing. And so, you know, Jonathan Miller here says he'd take Florida 14 or more, but Georgia should win. That kind of feels like where you're at.
You know what? I listen, a lot of years, I think I would probably look at that, especially here lately. I would look at that, and if somebody said that, I would say, come on, have a little faith in the team. They're really good. But that's kind of who I think Georgia is. And I think that's kind of what college football is. And honestly, I think Vegas, you know, I've read some stories about Vegas taking baths, historic baths this year in like, you know, groups of weeks, not just one week at the time. And I think they're kind of getting used to this, the way the portal and the way that the turnover has kind of affected this sport, and it's kind of taken and turned a lot of these teams that had 45 to 50 players that could play championship level football. That's been dwindled down to 35 or 40. And so, you know, that's making a difference to some of these games. And so rather than being able to build a lead, get some guys into the game and build on that lead even further, you're having a lot of teams that are struggling kind of getting to these high numbers. And as far as the betting, and I think that's one of the reasons, you know, Vegas, in my completely amateur opinion, that Vegas might be, you know, getting hit hard by some of this.
Yeah, No, I mean, and don't take betting advice from either of us because
sure,
our
I got two water cups going over here.
Dogs HQ last week against the spread, we came out one game above 500.
That's right, as a squad. Vice President Rusty cast the vote in the Senate by picking Georgia, and that was the one that got us over the top. By the way, Rusty and I were the only ones that picked Georgia over Texas.
Jeremy did too.
Oh, did he?
Yeah. Roos and I hand up. We were the ones that picked Texas to.
I can't believe Hayden asked Jeremy picked Georgia. We joke with Jeremy all the time over at Dogs HQ about how he's always just kind of real hard on prospects and stuff. So that's where that comes from.
Jake, did you see the most recent comment that just came in? Because that's got me laughing.
Okay, I can't wait. I was trying to look up some Florida stats here real quick.
It's from Coach Rowe, where your neck at, said, what would the Vegas over-under be on calories consumed in Austin last weekend? A lot.
You know, it was high, but we didn't just eat nonstop. You know, like we went and tanked up and had big meals, and then we were ooh.
I'll tell you this, though. The calories purchased higher than the calories eaten because Jake and I, and shocker, but there were some times where our eyes were way bigger than our stomachs.
Whoa, buddy. I mean, boy, you understand it too. I mean, it is, but like, you know, I will say like on Friday when we went to La Barbecue, we had a great experience. The food was amazing. La Barbecue is definitely one of the top barbecue spots in Austin. We went there. We had a short line. We got really lucky to get in quick, and we ate a big meal. We had got a couple links of sausage, a couple beef ribs. Both of us ate off of that. We all both got our own sandwiches. Got a couple of sides, all that stuff. We had plenty of food to eat. I'm pretty sure we ate all of that.
We did. We did eat all that, and that wasn't. I would say that wasn't our biggest meal because we had our initial plan.
Well, I don't know. It's the only meal we ate that day.
No, it's not.
It is for me. I mean, I guess I had a little sausage and macaroni and cheese good snack later on. Well, I guess, yeah, we had the wings too. But it wasn't like I've had these trips before where when you go to New Orleans, like you are just like you wake up in the morning and you start hunting food and you lay down at night like a bear that is ready to hibernate until next winter. You know, like you're ready to get, you know, we didn't quite do that in Austin. We did a lot of walking. Your boy put in 14,000 steps in flip flops. Okay, and my feet were like hamburger meat, like some like you know cube steak. So you know that was not.
Give him credit, y'all. Give him credit. He caught a second win there.
I caught a second win. We left the hotel for those that are even interested, and I wanted to get into this on Bark After Dark, and hopefully we can get Bark After Dark rolling this Monday, and you can come on and we can talk about Austin, but. You know, one of the things that we wanted to make sure we did is we wanted to have a day in Austin. Man, from 10 o'clock Saturday, Friday morning until midnight Friday night, we were at it. We saw 6th Street. We saw Rainy Street. We saw historic bars. We saw speakeasies. We went to the campus and went into the, Texas.
Saw Justice Terry.
Hall of Fame. Ran in. Guys, Justice Terry, I told Palmer, I said, hey, listen. This is the kind of spot we're going to run into Justice Terry. And he just kind of laughed. And you're up there in the bowels of Texas's athletic facility full of rich mahogany and leather bound things. Okay. It's very, very nice. So we go up there, we get our credential and our parking pass. We talk to a couple people over there. We come down, we take some pictures of Bevo in the Texas, Athletic
statue,
Hall of Fame.
Not the actual
statue. Bevo. Yeah. There's a huge life-size statue of Bevo over there. And we take a picture, and as we're taking it, here comes Justice Terry decked out in Texas gear around the corner. So I was like, wow, here we go. So I snapped a pic real quick and sent it to the guys. I didn't want to publicize it and get Texas in any trouble. But that was pretty interesting. And then, credit to Jeff Centel and Dog Nation. They got an interview with Justice Terry after that Texas visit, and he said Georgia made a big jump for him. So
I'll also give Jed May some credit. Interviewed Justice on the plane. They were getting off the plane in Atlanta And wow. Just, they were going to talk to Justice once they had gotten off, and there was a little bit of a holdup. And so right in the middle of the aisle on that plane, he interviewed Justice Terry.
Oh, man. Great, great stuff. And Jed does a good job, and we like those guys over there. We all hang out and enjoy each other. But, yeah, that's over-under on calories consumed in Austin is probably lower than you think. And listen, calories burned in Austin was there too.
True.
They also had some really nice Tex-Mex for us in the press box that my man Palmer, I didn't find this out until after the fact. My man Palmer went in on it, apparently. How many tacos did you have?
I had 3 pregame and then 2 at halftime. So
yeah, so that's so total, by my math. Wait a minute, hold on. Let me get my phone. Yeah,
1, 2, 3, plus 2.
That's five tacos at the game on Saturday.
I mean, you should have seen the number of beef and cheese burritos that were consumed by others in that.
Yeah, I mean, if they would have had more of those, I probably would have climbed up that number too. I was looking for some post game like a wild animal. Yeah,
so we took to famous Austin spot
In-N-Out Burger. it was by the exit by our hotel, and
1:30 a.m. A lot of Georgia fans there.
That was my biggest instance of my mouth. My eyes were bigger than my mouth because I ate about half a burger and some fries and I was done. So I started just taking it apart, but I was starving after that game. Fun times though, man. It's cool atmosphere. Cool to see what Georgia did there. We talked about it, but I think if Georgia wins a national championship this year, I think you'll look back on third and 10 from the 11-yard line. There's been a lot of talk this week about, and we've rabbit trailed it here, buddy. There's been a lot of talk this week about James Coley and the drops, and is James Coley doing a good job coaching Georgia's receivers? And listen, I've been highly critical of the shape James Coley left Georgia's wide receiver room in the first time he came, because I think that played a big role in Georgia's offensive struggles in 2019. But in saying that, I can also acknowledge the fact that in 2016, 2017, James Coley got the best out of Isaiah McKenzie for the 1 year, Javon Wims, Terry Godwin, Mecole Hardman, who was in his first year ever playing wide receiver, Riley Ridley, kind of got that going, helped develop Jeremiah Holloman. But the one thing I do want to point to, drops, buck always stops with the coaches when you're starting to talk about performance. But at what point in Arian Smith's career did you ever think he was going to run a hammer of a dig route, beat man coverage badly, and get you 20-something yards when you needed, 10 on third down? I don't think that was in Darian Smith's tool bag this time last year. And I think James Coley deserves some credit for that. But, hey, listen, he's got to pull the right strings, press the right buttons, and stroke the furry wall. If you're a big fan of get him to the Greek, he's got to do something to get these guys in the mental headspace to catch the football a little bit more consistently, that's for sure. All right, Palmer, we got to – I know something I'm going to be catching on Friday night, and that's NFHS. We're excited.
And you might take in one of James Coley's prized possessions, his Talon Taylor.
Is he on?
I don't know. I know you've used NFHS Network to watch him.
I have. I have not looked to see. Our man Jake Roos normally has an article. He'll post
this it. This is the game that's got – I don't think you can see my cursor there. But St. John Bosco, Mater Dei. That's some big boy football right there.
Yes, sir, it is. 100%.
Right there, front and center on the front page of NFHS.
And you can watch that from anywhere in the country thanks to NFHS and its massive database of high school athletics and games that you can watch live or on demand. We're talking about 10th grade boys football. We're talking B-team, 9th grade boys football, varsity. Listen, we're getting into the home stretch here of the 2024 season at the high school level. Some playoff seeds and some playoff, moves are being made right now. You got Justice Terry coming back to the field after dealing with an injury this week. That might be a game you can check out. But NFHS nationwide, Palmer. Again, I've watched games on the West Coast. I've watched games from Illinois, Texas. I've watched it all on NFHS this year. And it's tremendous. You can use the promo code DOGS25. Is that right, Palmer?
DOGS25.
D-A-W-G-S. I wasn't sure if it was Bulldogs25. It is DOGS, D-A-W-G-S-25. And you can save 25% off your first month. And if you sign up for it now and give yourself a sampling of it, you can carry this thing throughout the rest of college football season. Try it out for that one discounted month. And then, you know, make a judgment on it from there on out. Because if you've got family, other places in the state that play athletics, if you want to watch high school football, this is the place to do it. There's no better spot than FHS. They've been a wonderful partner for us, and I can't recommend them enough, man. I use this all the time. Usmani Chroma played against Coffee County a couple weeks ago, a game that Lee County dominated. It was right after Chroma had committed to Georgia. Sit there and I watched that game. I took clips out of them. I put them on Twitter. I put them in our group thread. And it was really fun to watch that game that night. I got to see Jeremiah McLeod. Coffee County's got a couple of pretty good players. It's a tremendous way to enjoy the game of football and to grow the sport. And then do your part. Get out there and grow the sport. Because I think things like NFHS is the next wave in making that happen and growing the sport and getting more eyeballs on it. Palmer, we've got some questions already. We've had them from the jump. And I got to kind of scroll back here and get to a few of those. Derek Durham, our man Derek Durham, says, with the pass-catching problems wide receivers had, do you think at some point it opens the door for the freshmen, Sakovi or Nitro, to get a shot? I wrote about that earlier this week. I don't know that any of those guys are going to move right in, Palmer, and take somebody's job, but I could see them start to take a few snaps, especially if they show that they're sure-handed. What you typically do, and this is something that going back to, you know, talking to some folks on staff during Mark Rick's era, and Georgia may do it different now. I remember having a conversation, I'm pretty sure it was with BMAC, Brian McClendon, back then. And he told me that kind of when you're trying to get a young receiver onto the field, you want to put together something and rep him in something throughout the week and kind of build a package for him and then kind of work out on it. I feel like Georgia's probably been in that process a little bit. And one thing we do know is this. Sakovi White has found his name on the injury report. Now, why is that important? Because they don't put players on the injury report that don't have a chance to play. That's, you know, Nasir Johnson's been on the injury report. Other guys have been out.
Johnson has not been on the injury report.
Yeah, right. He's been injured, but not on the report.
Yeah.
Call.
Yep.
Yeah. He's been unavailable, but not on the report. Chauncey Bowens didn't dress against Mississippi State. Yep. Was not on the availability report. Sakovi White, when he was dealing with a sprained MCL, one that he's over now and he shed the brace and he's good to go, he was on it. So that lets me know that as far as the way they practice and the way they're going, that Sakovi White is getting some pretty valuable reps.
Same goes for Joseph Jonah Janye this past week of being on there, but not necessarily, he was on the availability report, which to us says, hey, this is a guy that they could see getting in a game. Before we get any further, I do want to correct something. It's Go Dogs
25. Go Dogs 25. Go Dogs
25. AWGS 25 for 25% off first month.
You know how I know we did it wrong? Because I did it with the first thing that popped into my mind. You know, like that. I'm just wrong. Listen, if it just flies out of me.
You asked me, and I didn't. I hesitated and I said, yes. Go Dogs 25.
Just so y'all know, this is the only way Palmer ever takes accountability for anything is if he has company on being wrong. If we can be wrong together, Palmer's like, yeah, I was wrong. And you were too. No, I'm just messing with you. All right. So here we go. Talking about Sakovi White, right? Nitro Tuggles, I feel like, is in the same boat because Nitro Tuggles covering kickoffs. And that may not mean a whole lot to you guys, but as an old Broncos fan, and a longtime Georgia fan before, you know, I was able to get into this business and you know, kind of compartmentalize. I was a big Terrell Davis fan. Terrell Davis made his name with the Broncos covering a kickoff in Tokyo. So, I mean, it's a big deal. And Georgia doesn't put players it doesn't trust and aren't big-time athletes and aren't really good football players on those coverage units. And Tuggle, they called the hold on Dan Jackson on that when they returned back. Nitro Tuggle got a guy wrapped around him and just pulled him straight down because he was kind of barreling down and in the lane to kind of make that play. So I think the fact that he's playing special teams and Sakovi White is on that injury report, I do believe that those guys have a chance to play.
Let me ask you this, Jake, and this is a story that'll go up earlier, later today. So You know, those are tuning in, getting an early insight on Redshirt Report. Sakovi White, one game played. Nitro Tuggle, two games played. If you had to put your reputation on it, which isn't much, put your reputation on it. What
an already tattered reputation.
Does either one of those guys burn their red shirt, burn a year of eligibility this year?
Yeah, I think Sakovi. I think both of them will.
I think both of them will. I think Nitro does. Like you said,
the special teams thing, and I think
Sakovi playing on special teams says a lot.
I think Sakovi's going to get in the lineup. I think Sakovi's going to get into the rotation at receiver, and I don't think they're going to have a moment's, you know, question as to whether they're willing to burn a red shirt. I think Sakovi's red shirt would probably be gone or in peril already had he not sprained his MCL a few weeks ago. And you know, kind of he missed a couple weeks of reps, has a ripple effect on the rest of the season for a freshman.
Four freshmen have burned their year of eligibility already.
Yeah.
Only four.
And Chris Cole, I don't even think – is Chris Cole one of those?
Chris Cole has played in all seven games.
In all seven. I guess special teams for him too, yeah.
KJ Bolden, okay. Chris Cole, John Jackson, and Nate Frazier. Frazier's played in six.
Can I say something to Georgia fans real quick? You remember last year about this time when Georgia needed to move on from KJ Bolden and just not worry with it anymore and Kirby was wasting his time? I think Georgia fans are really glad Kirby is not wasting his time because, Palmer, I've watched him hit that dude, hit Wisner a half yard short of the first down marker about nine times this week. I mean, just over and over. That was a big boy play right there and a huge
step. And he had one of those stops in that Clemson game too. Georgia's two best performances this year, KJ Bolden, if I'm recalling that correctly, KJ Bolden had a third down stop in that game.
Tell you what, man, I've watched and kept up with Caleb Downs this year, and I've seen Malachi Starks play every game, and I don't know that – I'll go ahead and say it. When I look at KJ Bolden as a freshman, I think he can be better than either one of those guys. I think he can be better than either one. I really do. I think the cool thing if you're a Georgia fan right now is you're seeing KJ Bolden play at the level he's playing. You're seeing Dan Jackson play at the level he's playing. Dan Jackson's going to play on Sundays. All right. Malachi Starks has been a little bit up and down this season, but I give him some grace because they're constantly putting him in tough situations. How many safeties do you see matched up one-on-one with Ryan Williams like he was against Alabama? So Georgia has a lot of trust there. But there are a lot of guys playing good football back there. And you got Ja'Cory Thomas going to get a chance to step up and play a lot against Florida as well. And that's a guy who came on during the preseason, has continued to battle. Ja'Cory Thomas was already finding himself on the field in Georgia's third down situations as that money linebacker. So that playing time should pay off pretty well for him. Let's keep it moving here. Question, you think Carson Beck's dealing with an injury? I think he was earlier this year. I had heard that he was earlier this year.
Kirby told us he was earlier
this year. Yeah, he was.
AC joint.
Yeah, he had the AC joint.
And the non-throwing shoulder. Yeah.
Right. Yep. Non-throwing shoulder. You know, I was told at one point that there was some core stuff going on. You know, took some hits, I think, against Kentucky, that he had some soreness and some pain going on there. So, you know, but I don't necessarily think that's the issue now. I think Carson Beck has kind of, to me, what it looks like, and I'm probably got some confirmation bias here. I'll be the first to admit that, is I think Carson was real hesitant and real careful through those first few games, and I think against Kentucky, not turning it loose put Georgia in a tough situation in that game, and I think he was a little too safe with the football. And I think Alabama week, bye week, it probably got pounded into him. Hey, Carson, you got to let it rip. And maybe he's gotten a little too careless with it, and there's just, hey, just a couple notches back the other way. Get yourself back to that guy whose floor is one turnover. And you know, because that's the thing. I mean – if you put everything out there for Carson Beck, drops and everything, and there's no turnovers, there's zero turnovers, or just one turnover for Georgia in that game on Saturday, I think Georgia's we're looking at the beatdown that everybody saw, and it talks about it not being as close as it was. I think the score would have reflected that.
Yeah.
All right, let's keep moving here on the questions. I don't see a ton. Oh,
yeah, couple about James Coley that we kind of already addressed. Chris Cole.
Yep, absolutely. I think that might be it for our questions. We got the one about the calories in Austin. I think we covered that one. Excellent. Glenn Hartley, we got one more for you. Uncle Glenn Hartley, man, Uncle Glenn Hartley's been here from the jump. I got to say that. I miss hearing Wes's voice say, oh, Uncle Glenn Hartley. I do miss Wes's voice shouting out Uncle Glenn Hartley. We miss Wes too. Love him to death. Saw him recently. He seems to be doing awesome. He said Rod Robinson, availability, question mark.
Don't think so.
If he's back, we're looking probably around this time next month. But I'm not super optimistic in that. There was some chatter that he would be back in November early on. But there was also some chatter at that same time that he may miss the rest of the season. I kind of felt a little bit more on the optimistic side of that, but it was apparently it was a very rough injury. He's had a tough time kind of, you know, getting on the other side of the surgery.
The other thing is the conditioning factor, especially at a position like that. It's just going to be so tough. You know, what I had been hearing was that it was probably looking more like a season ending deal. And I, you know, as we talk about red shirts, he's somebody that they will probably try to save a red shirt on.
I believe they saved one on him last year.
He played in five games, but I'm not certain how that bowl game.
Nah, the orange as of last year, postseason didn't count.
But he's listed on the roster as a sophomore.
Yeah, so. But one of his four. Sometimes they do that. But one of his if the participation chart is right, and they got it, and he didn't play in more than, because he can play in four regular season games, and not a fifth. One way or the other, he's going to get a red shirt. You know, it'll be either this year or next year. Yeah. So he's going to get one this year. He'd have to come back like now, you know, very soon and I don't think he's going to come back in time to play four regular season games, but I mean, he either got one last year, got one this year.
If he didn't play in a game this year, you could probably get a medical red shirt.
Probably. Yeah. You could probably, but you know, you look at running back, how, you know, effective is that? I mean, those guys try to get to the league and make a roster as soon as they can. Now they're on a different timetable than everybody else. We're on the same timetable from here on out. We got Sunday night Georgia show. We're going to be ready to roll. We're going to get really into previewing Florida. You know, it should be Roos and Rusty on that one. We'll be at Dogs HQ Plus first thing Tuesday morning. I'm going to do everything we can to get Bark After Dark this Monday night and do a recap of Austin and how everything went there. And then we'll be back with you next Thursday for that last show before Palmer and I head to Jacksonville to cover whatever rendition of the world's largest outdoor cocktail party it is. We appreciate all of you. Thank you so much for being a part of us and making us part of your day. Have a great weekend. We love you.